You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
It's that time of the week again, folks, and it's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters closer to the stars, as I like to say each week. We've been getting some emails in, always very positive, always flattering to get a few emails from those of you out there. Of course, you can get in touch. That's columbiacalling@gmail.com and via the website, that's columbiacallingradio.com. Most of the emails, actually, bizarrely, in recent weeks have been about the title track to the intro and the outro of this show. And for those of you interested in cumbia music here from Colombia, this song is Toto La Momposina, and it's her song El Pescador. So you can find that, obviously, on all sorts of outlets out there, and listen to it if you just want to hear it on Groove Shark and other Spotify accounts if you've got them out there. So it's Toto La Momposina, El Pescador, which is, of course, one of her great songs. And she's from Mompós. Well, she's from near to Mompós, where I have my little hotel, the Casa Amarilla, which continues to surprise and astound with a flow of tourists, which is always very good. So now, talking this week on Columbia Calling, we're going to be speaking to Javier Nieto. Javier is a Venezuelan located today, or at this point in time, in Jacksonville, Florida. And we're talking about Venezuela because, as I always say, it's our sister country here in Colombia. And it's really important that we know and get a more informed idea of what is going on in Venezuela. Because, of course, in the mainstream media, we get sort of one idea. And then, of course, in the very pro, let's say, regime media, we'll get another idea. So it's very interesting to actually talk to someone involved in Venezuela. And he's a security expert and an analyst and executive protection provider, and he used to be in the military for 10 years in Venezuela. He's in opposition to the regime and spent some time in jail due to this fact. So we're going to talk about the situation between Colombia, Venezuela, the border areas, what's going on in Caracas, Venezuela, the security situation, and how Javier himself feels that Venezuela's future will unravel and unfold. So it's an important situation for those of us in Colombia. I know this is Colombia Calling, but what happens in Venezuela affects directly Colombia. So we're going to be talking to Javier in a couple of minutes, and don't go away. You're listening to Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall in Bogota, Colombia, and we'll be right back talking about Venezuela with Javier Nieto, and I hope you enjoy this show. Thank you.
Are you looking for your next retirement destination, just not sure where? What benefits do you have or don't you by living abroad? Is the international real estate market safe? My name is Domingo Silva, CEO of Escape Artist, the premier authority on international living, and we're having our first annual conference in Orlando, Florida, October 10th to the 12th. Come and get the answers you've been looking for and so much more. For more information, go to overseasradio.com and click on the conference banner. See you there.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota. And like every week, we have a special guest on the show. And it's always important to have people on the show who can inform us further about a situation in our region. And of course, we're here in Colombia. But I've mentioned before in previous shows that we need to talk about Venezuela. Venezuela is obviously a sister country to Colombia. And whatever goes on in Venezuela is of direct consequence. There's a cause and effect in Colombia as well. So this week, I'm very pleased to say we've got an actual expert in sort of security matters and an ex-military man who was in the Venezuelan National Guard for 10 years.
His name is Javier Nieto. He runs an executive protection company, an analysis group, and so on, and works out of Florida and Venezuela. And I know he comes into Bogota a fair amount of time, but we've got him today in Jacksonville, Florida. And we want to talk about the situation in Venezuela, because the idea is that we inform the listeners out there a little bit more than what is taking place and what is reported in the mainstream media. So Javier Nieto, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you for taking the time to speak to us. So welcome on Columbia Calling.
Thank you, and good morning, Richard. Thank you for inviting me to your program.
You're very welcome, Javier. Now, listen, you have a vast amount of experience in the National Guard, in security, and you do analysis, you do protection detail, but you're up there in Florida at the moment. Just give us a little bit of a background on, let's say, on the situation in Venezuela at the moment, because we hear obviously lots of negative news, and then if you read the pro-Venezuela press, we read that everything is rosy and perfect, and honestly I just don't know what to believe anymore. So give me a little bit of a background of what's going on in Venezuela.
Yes, let's talk in base of my experience as a former officer of the National Guard and law enforcement. Let me talk since the optics of the military forces and security. So in Venezuela right now, especially in the border states like Táchira, which is the border with Cúcuta, mm-hmm, and Barinas, and Apure, and Amazonas, there are big problems with the security, because the political point of view are crashing with the military point of view in terms of the ideologies, okay? Through the ideology of this government since 1999 and 2000, which is communist regime, they are open doors for the guerrillas in Colombia, and in those borders, the military forces, they have no control about the social situation, but the control is in the hands of the FARC or the ELN, those irregular and terrorist groups. This situation provoked to the officers two ways. One of them, the first group of the officers in which I am, mm-hmm, were the officer who say to our generals or our chief and commanders, we cannot accept that now we are friends of the FARC or ELN, because they are our former enemies. And I cannot say to the family of the soldiers who were victims from the FARC or ELN, and they get killed years before in the border, I cannot say to the family of them, now I am friend of the people who killed your son or your brother, okay? So this group of officers like me, we became like enemies of the regime, and we get like victims of persecution. Mm-hmm. The other group of officers who maybe they say, I just need to obey order of my general commander, who is Chavez or now Maduro, they just let them go wherever they want. And guerrillas, at least in Ureña, San Cristobal, these cities, they have control of the situations like social problems and security problems. So the military forces and the law enforcement are like disappointed with this situation, and it's kind of big problem into the security in these areas in Venezuela, okay?
Yes.
And also I think that's problem for Colombia, because if they are, well, even though they are trying to do negotiations, I don't know how are going these negotiations with this irregular or terrorist groups, where they do stuff in Colombia and they find protection in Venezuela, because this governor offered that protection to these groups. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now, was it, let's say, because we're talking about the fragmented border area there, where the borders are essentially open. So we're talking between Norte Santander and Arauca, and you're talking about Táchira and San Cristóbal. And so, but with this fluidity of the guerrilla groups, the FARC and the ELN, from within Colombia into Venezuela, this was an official state policy by, let's say, former President Chavez and now President Maduro?
Yeah, the Chavez, and that was one of my problems. I end up in prison, by the way, for that situation. I think it was in 2002, 2003. In the Congress, he say, public, he say, now we are friends of the FARC, for example, okay? Mm-hmm. And the statement was public, and that was the day when I say, sorry, General, I disagree with the situation. And they start a kind of persecution, you know, mm-hmm. persecution, and, you know, you get in trouble with it. Mm-hmm.
So hang on. So,
sorry. Let me say an example.
Okay.
In 2004, 2005, Lieutenant Colonel Quintero, Francisco Quintero, he was the chief officer of GAES. GAES means Grupo Anti-Extorsión y Secuestro, anti-kidnapping group in Táchira, San Cristóbal. Mm-hmm. Okay. The Lieutenant Colonel got information from Colombia that Granda, Rodrigo Granda, which uh-huh. was or is, I don't know, one of the heads or the staff of the FARC, he was in Caracas, in Valencia. This is an area, Valencia is next to Caracas in the central part of Venezuela. Uh-huh. And he got information, Commandant Lieutenant Colonel Quintero went through him with his group, and he sized him, and he did go back to Colombia, and he gave him to the authorities in Colombia. Uh-huh. When he get back to Venezuela, he got in prison, okay, and he was victim of tortures because I was at that time in prison in Ramo Verde, and I saw when the Dirección de Inteligencia Militar, the intelligence units of the government, they got him and they tortured him because he was the person who sized Rodrigo Granda in Venezuela. And mm-hmm. that happened. And I see it what I'm talking to you. Okay.
Right.
I saw it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So Rodrigo Granda, who was his nom de guerre is Simon Trinidad, no? He was one of the big financiers in the FARC group, and he was seized in Venezuela. So the lieutenant colonel who was involved in this was then subject to torture, imprisonment, and today, where is this lieutenant colonel? Where is Quintero?
That lieutenant colonel, he got like 6 or 7 years in the military prison. I share with him, by the way, the same jail for a year or something like that. We used to talk a lot about it. How we were disappointed, what happened with the military forces in Venezuela. And he then end up, I think, in Bogota. He is now, I think so, I'm pretty sure, in Bogota. Okay. He did flee to Bogota after he get his prison, like 7 years.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. And so you were imprisoned as well for disagreeing with the national politics.
Correct. Okay. Because, I graduated with honors in my promotion, Richard, 5 years in my military school in Caracas, Fuerte Tiuna. Mm-hmm. I went through my grades, my ranks as tenant, lieutenant, and captain with honors too. Never got problems. I used to love my military forces. I feel like a soldier, a patriot in my country. But my crime was to say how we gonna became friends of the people who used to kill my farmers in the border, who used to kidnap my families in the border, and who used to kill our soldiers in the border. It's like Obama here in the United States say to the military forces, because he is communist, and he say, well, we are now friends of ISIS, or we are now friends of Al-Qaeda, something like that. I figure out that way. In that time, you became enemy of the regime because you think different, okay?
Mm-hmm. It's a very dangerous situation. And of course, this is a very interesting situation to consider now as we are in, let's say, the ongoing peace dialogues here in Colombia, which are taking place between the FARC and the Colombian government in Havana, Cuba. They started in November 2012. And of course, one of the big debates is what is going to happen now with the armed forces. So the sort of situation that you are describing is something that must be under discussion right now in the military bases here in Colombia and indeed in Havana, Cuba, between the FARC guerrillas and the Colombian government's negotiating team. It's a very difficult situation. So you've lived it. So if you were to say, you know, let's take an example that perhaps peace with the FARC is signed, how would you react as a soldier?
Our doctrine as a soldiers is that they are terrorist groups. They survive because they produce and they protect cocaine business and marijuana, and they send all this to United States and Europe to do their business, and they used to kill women and children. So in my formation as a soldier, I cannot negotiate with criminals. I'm not politic, okay? Since they used to kill women and children, I don't recognize them as subjects of the international community. So I cannot negotiate with criminals, you know? Mm-hmm. That's my position, okay?
Yes. And I think I would imagine that most soldiers, and particularly here in Colombia, would think the same way. I mean, it's a very similar upbringing and education.
Exactly. It's the same education in the military school. And not only the military school, but the international laws said that when the – I'm not a lawyer, but I used to read something about it. If the soldiers, according to the agreements in Geneva and all those laws and the war laws, mm-hmm. they say that if any unit or any force who don't respect the laws of the war, they are not accepted as subject of the international community. And when they used to kill women and kids, they are not accepted, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're coming to the end of this first section of the show, and so we're going to come winding down, but don't leave us. Keep listening, because we're going to continue talking to Javier Nieto, a security expert, a former 10-year National Guard working at the border areas between Colombia and Venezuela, and of course now running an executive protection company, an analysis company in Venezuela and in Florida, and coming down here to Colombia very frequently. So we're talking about the situation in Venezuela and how this corresponds to Colombia, because of course, as sister countries, as part of the Nueva Granada, you know, Ecuador, Venezuela, Colombia, all together, these are very similar countries, very similar shared history, very similar populations. And of course, what is going on now in Venezuela affects directly, has direct effects to whatever is happening in the politics, the economy, and the social, structure of Colombia. So it's very important that we, as, let's say, foreigners or people interested in Colombia or Venezuela, are aware that there is more to the news than what is going out there in the mainstream media outlets. That's the truth of the situation. We only get small reports on the reality, partially because of a real, let's say, international media blockout on Venezuela. But we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back and continue talking with Javier Nieto about the situation in Venezuela and his experiences here as a security expert, and to share with us some more information about the reality of Venezuela and Colombia at this time. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Please don't go away.
Thinking of starting your own podcast? Not sure where to begin? Well, now there's an easy and fun way to do it yourself. Podfly Academy. Podfly Academy is an online training program that takes you from absolute beginner to professional podcaster in a series of online training videos, interactive webinars, and step-by-step materials taught by our talented panel of podcasting experts. With everything from setting up your microphone to how to create your own show in iTunes. Podfly Academy is the one-stop resource to get you on your way. Visit www.podflyacademy.com today to pre-enroll in this one-of-a-kind course. Podfly Academy, podcasting made easy.
And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall here in Bogota, and we're talking to Javier Nieto in Jacksonville, Florida, and we're talking about Venezuela and the relationship with Colombia and politically, socially, economically. Now, Javier, we've been talking about security. We've been talking about the problems of this porous border between Venezuela and Colombia. And one thing that we haven't really touched on, of course, is the issue of illegal drugs moving across the border. And in my time as a journalist here, I'm now 8 years in Colombia and 16 years in Latin America. I know that the border is porous, and I know that Venezuela has become a transshipment route for Colombian cocaine. With your knowledge as a security expert, what can you tell me about this?
Okay. In terrorismos and FARC and ELN, now illegal drugs are other part of the security problem in the border, and Colombia have another consequence involved into this 12 years or 14 years of this government or this regime. What happened in terms of illegal drugs is that I know, and I'm a witness of it, okay, uh-huh, is that since Chavez get the power, he sent out the gringos or the DEA all about North America relationships. They get out for political ideologies, okay? They are the evil empire, and we cannot share with them whatever they used to help us, okay? Uh-huh. Well, before Chavez, we used to do, in terms of drugs, a lot of international operation, because the illegal drugs is a problem that you need to help in very close with the other countries, because one countries are the ones production countries, others are bridge countries, others are consumer countries, others are safe haven to the money laundering. And so to fight the cartels, you need to talk according to the international law, police and law enforcement, okay? Uh-huh. Since Chavez affected, we have a lot of consequences. One example is in the chemicals diversion. What happened? Colombia produced 70% of the cocaine who is going to United States or Europe, okay? And Venezuela doesn't produce cocaine, but Venezuela have the raw materials sometimes that Colombia doesn't have, for example. In this time, they need to talk together to Colombia attack the cartels, and Venezuela need to attack or control the chemicals diversion, which is 100% necessary to produce cocaine, for example. Uh-huh. Potassium permanganate is the most important raw material the Colombian cartels need to produce cocaine, 90% pure cocaine. And before Chavez, we used to do operations to control the companies in Venezuela who produce or use legal raw materials. For example, the industry of the mineral water, they need to import from China permanganate of potassium to produce mineral water, okay? Mm-hmm. However, some companies, they import 1,000 or 10,000 kilograms of potassium permanganate, and they use 500 of this quantity to produce mineral water in Venezuela, and the rest of the permanganate of potassium they send out to Colombia, and they do business with the cartels to produce cocaine. Mm-hmm. Well, since Chavez era, we cannot control these companies, so there is more easy for the companies and the cartels do business with these raw materials to produce more illegal drugs than before times, okay? Mm-hmm. I used to do this operation. We used to find from the international police also some finance support to do special operations or pay informants and stuff like that. Now, in this era, it's not possible to deal with another police organization to work together against the cartels. So it's more easy to the criminal organization in Colombia or Venezuela in terms of illegal drugs to go forward with this negotiation. This is another consequence. So because the Colombia government is trying to control cartels and illegal produce, they need also support from Venezuela to fight with them. But if Venezuela don't do that, it's more difficult to Colombia to stop the illegal drugs sending from Colombia to another countries. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, so it's a tricky situation. So we are seeing that the raw materials and the let's say the science, the chemicals needed to produce and to break down the coca leaves, this is coming in from legally being bought in Venezuela and being brought across with no no official controls. Now, let's talk about the border area a bit more, because I know recently President Juan Manuel Santos here in Colombia and President Nicolas Maduro there in Venezuela decided to shut the border between Colombia and Venezuela to combat the contraband of food and basic materials like toilet paper and other things. If you were there working on the border, is your knowledge as a, you know, as a soldier, is this policy going to help stop contraband? I don't think so, but I just think it's a lot of hot air. It's a lot of talk.
No, for me the border is opposite effect, because it's more demanding these products. Okay. What happened in El Táchira and San Cristóbal, for example, is that they don't have any products, like you say, toilet paper, meal, eggs, and stuff like that, because the poor economy in Venezuela is like 56% inflation per year now. It makes the worth of the currency very low, while Colombian money is very high, the currency worth, okay? Mm-hmm. Power, and then all people in Cúcuta is going to Venezuela, and they buy all products and they send it, because they buy very cheap and they sell it in Colombia. Okay, mm-hmm. Now when they close the border, at least in North Santander, which is Cúcuta, all this area, Chinacota, Pamplona, all this area, this very big border with no efficient controls with the police or law enforcement. So the smugglers, they find another ways to sell the same products, but in high price. So this is no solution, okay? Mm-hmm. The solution should be one day, we hope soon, the economy in Venezuela get better, the government do a transformation in macro and micro economy, and to get a better way to drive this economy, this disaster economy, okay?
Yeah, it's true. Now tell me something. You still have lots of family in Venezuela, Javier?
Yes. And by the way, in El Táchira, we are originals from San Cristóbal. And by the way, I don't know if you used to see the news in Venezuela like 5-6 months ago, the rebellion of El Táchira, San Cristóbal.
Yes.
Okay. That happened because this is a city or a state very affected for that situation, from the problems between Venezuela and Colombia and the economy problems, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And all my family is there in San Cristóbal.
And they're all suffering from the economic repercussions at the moment.
Yeah. They go to the supermarket and they need to stay in the line like 2 hours. And they cannot buy whatever they want. They can buy whatever the government say or the owner of the supermarket say. We are one of the best countries in terms of gas and petroleum production. And if you going today to San Cristóbal and you don't have a special ship, which is an authorization, a special authorization for put gas in your car, you cannot drive in San Cristóbal, for example. You know, because it's a lot of contraband, gas from San Cristóbal to Cúcuta.
Mm-hmm. And I read recently that in the supermarkets in Venezuela, President Maduro was saying that he was going to implement the fingerprinting, so that yep. so people could buy only, you know, a certain amount of times and a certain, so that they couldn't save food, hoard food. Now, has that come into practice yet?
Not yet. I think like a week ago, he saw the polls and saw the some statistic, and he knew that in terms of politics, it will be a very bad consequence for him. And he said, well, we're going to research a little more about it, but it's not in practice still. But he was his plan. It was his plan.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But so, I mean, it's really fascinating to put this all into context. And I imagine you being in Florida, you have a big group of friends who are Venezuelan and the diaspora who have left Venezuela. I know I've certainly got some friends who've left Caracas and now live in Miami. And here in Bogota, it's I mean, between, let's say, 98th Street and 115th Street, it's little Caracas. I mean, everyone who can, who has the means to do so, is getting out. So who is remaining in Venezuela?
Well, unfortunately, that's true. A lot of people is fleeing. A lot of people is an immigrant, not only in Bogota and Miami, but in other countries around the world. Everyone has tried to find better future for their family. It's sad, it's disappointed, because if all good people leave the country, who gonna find for a better future for Venezuela, no? That's the big question, no? Mm-hmm. Although I have hope and faith that we are going direct to a big social explosion or civil war or something like that, because even the poor people, that 70% of people who live like in favelas, I don't know if you have been in Venezuela these years before, but it's like Brazil. You can see in Caracas, especially, it's 70% of the population who live in a very, very low poverty. I think these people is gonna end up his limits soon, and it will be French Revolution or something like that. Very bad in Venezuela, because they realize that Venezuela is a country with a lot of natural resources, a lot of sources to be a very, very rich country, but in opposite, we have a small group of leaders of the revolution with billions of dollars, and the 70% of poor people just almost dying on the streets of Venezuela. Okay,
I have not been in Venezuela, I have to admit, since 1997. I mean, it's been a long time. It was one of the first places I went to in Latin America. I had friends in England who had family in Caracas, so we visited there, and Merida and Los Roques, of course, and Choroní, and I found it to be a wonderful country to visit. I have not been back. It does worry me a little bit if I have to go there. I mean, you know, it's not the most friendly situation for a journalist at the moment. I have stories of friends being threatened and chased out of areas and accused of being, you know, members of the imperialist empire and so on. But so, I mean, you were talking about conflict and you were talking about revolution. I mean, we all thought, you know, from like January, was it around January 22nd when the student uprising started in various cities, and we saw it on the news, and then there was a blackout. I mean, there were those of us who really thought that this social movement would be enough to, let's say, move Venezuela back to a more democratic state. But are these demonstrations and these uprisings still continuing, or has this already died out?
No, listen. This uprising was as a consequence of the economical and social problem. Okay, and this disaster in terms of economics is getting worse since March or April this year, okay? Uh-huh. Now, when I talk about the revolution or about an explosion, social explosion, it was because while the students' movement, they got control to the Táchira State, Mérida, and Carabobo. Mm-hmm. At the same time, President Maduro, during a speech to UNASUR in April 20th, he say, I'm in control of everything, and all the military forces are under my control, and this revolution gonna stay for years and years and years. Okay, he said that on March 20th. Mm-hmm. And on April 2nd, he said, I size three division generals, and I have 20 lieutenant captains and majors in the military prison because they try to conspiration against the regime, the revolution, no? Mm-hmm. So the last time when this regime fell down was in April 2002, the regime fell down for 5 days.
Yeah.
Chavez, he admits, I don't know if you remember, he admits he's renounced, he get out from the power,
yeah.
Okay? And it was like a transition for 5 days, and then Chavez get back because any political problems. That time is the only time in these 14 years with the regime fell down because the civil population uprising plus a group of militants support the civil population. Okay?
Yeah.
And this time when Maduro say that the civil population was on the street through the students, and he got like 20 or 30 officers right now, by the way, in prison, the military prisons, I can't figure out that it was something to happen to like April 11, 2002, okay? Uh-huh. So the social problem and the economical problem is still going on. The young people of the military forces are really still very disappointed with this country, not only because they are destroying the military forces, but also because they have family too, and their family, they have also they are victims of this social and economical problem. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So I can figure out that it is still something to happen in the very low time. It's mm-hmm. going to happen again.
So you think in a short amount of time there will be some sort of civil uprising in Venezuela? And I'm just thinking, you know, I know we read about Venezuela, and is there still a great deal of Cuban influence in Venezuela at the moment? Because I remember when Chavez first started, he was bringing over, I think, all of his security is Cuban, and of course hundreds of doctors to the poor areas, to the favelas and so on. Is this still going on?
Yes, this is still going on. There is still Cuban involved in the military and social positions in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. And this is other ingredient through get the situation worse in Venezuela in mm-hmm. terms of military forces and social problems too. And also, as security in security terms, the year 2013, it was 24,000 homicides in Venezuela, and right now is around 3 kidnappings per day in Venezuela too, in average. Okay.
3 kidnappings a day.
Exactly.
Wow.
Some of them, or most of them, express kidnappings, which is they get you for 8, 10, or 12 hours, they get your money from the, ATM and stuff like that. And others are long-time kidnappings, but in average, it's 3 kidnappings per day in Venezuela.
Well, of course, and of course, you are particularly well-placed to talk about this because you have you work for a company that offers executive protection and analysis there in Venezuela.
Exactly.
Can you share with us which is the company that you work for, or you are a director of, or you work for?
Yeah, our company's name is Enkelson Security.
Mm-hmm.
We do executive protection. We have armored vehicles to protect business people, celebrities, or religious leaders are going to Venezuela. We do risk assessment. If somebody need to do something in Venezuela, we provide risk assessment, and we do corporate investigations too.
Mm-hmm. That's very interesting. And I imagine, I mean, you know, it's not a positive thing, but I imagine that business is booming because of the security situation in Venezuela.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Everyone We have, for example, like a year ago, a very hard situation with the ex-Miss Venezuela. I don't know if you saw that those news. She was going from Valencia to Caracas. She got a beautiful woman, well, as Miss Venezuela. Mm-hmm. She was with her family. And she was coming from the beach to her house one Sunday. And she got a flat tire. And she just get out of the car to repair. She couldn't do that. She get support from the town. When she was going to Caracas, somebody came to robbery and they killed her and her husband too, for example.
That's terrible news.
Like 3 weeks ago, Deutschland, Germany doctor, he was doing some business in Caracas and he got killed in the Euro Building Hotel. So it's news and bad news about crime. It's no control of the crime because the regime is also promoting no control of security in Venezuela. They have some groups they call Círculos Bolivarianos, which is like the armed group to protect the revolution. Mm. When they cannot use the military forces or the law enforcement, they are civil groups with weapons, with no authority, with no laws. They provide weapons to attack the demonstrations against the government, like in China, the Red Guard of China, you know, mm-hmm. these groups, they are getting paid from the government and they have weapons with no control. So it's kind of a free city in Caracas to get to do whatever you want if you say, I am protecting the revolution. Okay.
It just sounds like a situation where you don't even have the right to have a different opinion. It's very troubling indeed. Now, Javier, we're coming to the end of the show. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I'd like to thank you for your time and sharing this remarkable insight into what's going on. But as a security expert and as a Venezuelan, what would your advice be to people thinking of traveling to Venezuela at the moment? What would you say to them?
Well, if you are just like a tourist going to Venezuela, you need to try to go very, very low profile in terms of don't get like luxuries, watches, glasses or whatever. You try to plan in advance all your itinerary, what hotel are you going to do, to check what kind of hotel, where is located this hotel. Don't get taxis, normal taxis in the aeropuerto in Maiquetía. But if you have a friend or family there, try to get in touch with them, or you can hire any security advisor or company to do your transportation from aeropuerto Simón Bolívar to Caracas, which is very dangerous area. And if your audience or you need to go, you can ask. We have some tips. I will send it to you and you can send to your contacts. Uh-huh. Writing tips to do through it if they go to Venezuela.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's fantastic. Javier, I will, of course, promote your company and I would like to thank you for your time speaking to us today and giving us a very, informed summary of what's going on in Venezuela. And of course, for those of us in Colombia and for those of us who know Venezuela, we hope that the situation resolves itself soon and that, of course, you can return home. So, Javier, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you for your invitation, Richard.
It's been a real pleasure. We've been talking to Javier Nieto, an executive protection and analysis expert who's Venezuelan, who is currently in Jacksonville, Florida. We'll on the Facebook site and on the website, you'll see links to his company and so on. And if you want to know anything further about Venezuela or the border areas with Colombia, get in touch. And well, of course, we can pass on the details. This has been Colombia Calling. I've been Richard McCall. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening.
This podcast was produced in part by Podfly.net. Podfly, passion for great sounding podcasts.